I'm Jamie Cochran.
I'm Leif Babin.
Lead Win,
an extreme ownership podcast.
We're back. We've said it before. The world doesn't need another podcast.
The world doesn't need another podcast. But what the world does need is to understand that a lot of the problems that so many of us are frustrated with are actually leadership problems. And I think people don't think about it that way. And the solution to those problems is leadership. So when you recognize that it's a leadership problem, you could take the principles that we teach and apply them to those problems to actually solve them. And that enables you to win. That's why we title this podcast Lead and Win, because when you lead, you win in every aspect of your life.
Yeah. So for today, what I've been thinking about is there's this growing trend. I've seen a lot of content recently from people in our same space in leadership talking about having hard conversations. And the pitch is you have to have hard conversations. Leaders have to have the tough conversations. And there's some truth to that, but we think of things a little differently at Echelon Front. And that is actually that good leaders avoid difficult conversations. What do we mean by that?
What that means is that if you're leading correctly, you shouldn't have to have hard conversations, because you can avoid hard conversations if you're actually leading your team, if you're empowering your team, if you're giving them constant critique and ways that they can improve and get better, if you're letting them step up to lead. And so I think that's what we mean by that. And it sounds very counterintuitive, because certainly we're not saying that you should not engage with a hard conversation when you need to, but you can avoid most hard conversations simply by effective leadership. And I think that, you know, what we wrote about in Dichotomy of Leadership is that most underperformers don't need to be fired, they need to be led.
Yeah, I think that there's this growing trend of we have to fire fast, we have to get in there, we have to have these difficult conversations when your team screws up, we have to be willing as leaders to step in and have those tough conversations. And what we say at Echelon Front is there's so much more with the mindset of extreme ownership in place. There's more that we can do in those situations leading up to that place before we have to have that hard conversation to help someone on our team perform, to help our team understand what the mission is and to move towards accomplishing that mission. And I think the first thing we start with is relationships. What are you doing prior to that difficult conversation, if you have to have it, to build that relationship? And the stronger your relationship, the more likely you are to manage those situations well before they get to a place of no return.
Think about that. If you and I don't have a good relationship, you don't trust me, you don't respect me, I don't really have any influence over you, you don't listen to what I have to say. If I'm trying to have a hard conversation with you, then you're thinking it's coming from a place of I'm just trying to undermine you. I'm just trying to make you look bad. So you're not going to actually listen and take on board what I'm trying to say. So the hard conversation is going to have to be a lot harder. Whereas if we have a strong relationship, you trust me, you listen to me, I actually have some influence on what you have to say. You respect where I'm coming from and what my experiences are. And most importantly, when you know that I care about you, if I'm giving you some guidance to say, hey, Jamie, why don't you think about this? Or let's think about what that looks like to everybody else. Or, hey, you know what? Here's something where you might be able to improve. You know that I'm actually looking out for your long-term good. So absolutely, if the stronger relationship that you have with someone, the more ability you actually have to influence them. And so that can, instead of having a tough conversation to say like, hey, you're here and you need to get here, we're going to actually have to let you go, I can help you to get better. Just like you can give me some feedback and help me get better if we have a good relationship.
I think one of the biggest challenges people have is that they overestimate the strength of their relationships. We assume our relationships are so much stronger than they are. And so we have those hard conversations and they don't go well. They don't land in the way that we're hoping. Whereas if we prioritize earlier, before we have to have those tough conversations, building that relationship, building in that mutual trust, listening to what they have to say, showing that they can influence us, or just showing them that we care about them, we can either avoid the hard conversation or that conversation becomes much more effective because they recognize our true intent and we don't have to try to hide that in the way we're trying to give feedback to someone.
Totally. And I think that starts from, you know, understanding that relationship. Absolutely. But hard conversations are a lot easier when you take ownership. So if you work for me, I'm your boss, and you're doing some things that you shouldn't be doing. Maybe you don't understand what the strategy is and you're going a little bit different direction, or maybe you didn't understand what the parameters are where you can make decisions and you're getting outside of those parameters. Well, whose fault is that? It's my fault. it's totally my fault. So instead of coming down on you and saying, hey, Jamie, you're screwed up, you need to fix this, what I actually need to say is, hey, Jamie, I haven't done a good job of explaining to you this new strategy. I haven't done a good job of explaining to you the parameters inside of which, you know, I need you to make decisions, outside of which we have to run it up the chain of command to get permission. So if I take ownership of those things, then you're a lot more likely to take ownership of those things. And so instead of being a hard conversation where I'm, you know, really coming at you, you know, pretty directly and giving you some very direct feedback, it's actually a very positive conversation because you recognize that I care about you. I want you to be successful. And I'm taking ownership of not doing a good enough job of explaining that. And so now you can start to take ownership of asking more questions, of building that better relationship. And we're not going to actually have to have a hard conversation because we're going to move forward in a positive direction.
Yeah. One of the practical tools we teach leaders to help mitigate the need for these hard conversations and to build in your relationship is to implement a culture within your organization or your family. This works at home too. I use it with my kids, but to implement a culture of using the debrief and implementing this idea of the debrief. And when you have a culture and a group of people, a team or your family that debriefs everything, you can avoid the hard conversations because you're having all these little moments to give each other feedback. And that debrief is super simple. Hey, what was good? What was bad? What can we do better? And you're taking just a little bit of a moment. It doesn't have to be super formal. It doesn't have to take a lot of time, but having those little conversations when you're working towards accomplishing something avoids the big conversations down the road. Because in that moment, right at the time that something is happening, you're taking that moment to say, hey, let's talk about what went well, what went wrong, and then, hey, what are we going to do next time to ensure this doesn't happen again? And to the point you made, what the debrief gives us is the opportunity to take ownership throughout that process. So when you're giving the debrief at every step, I'm looking for how do I take ownership of this problem, which builds in my trust, builds in that strong relationship, which allows us, if over time we have to have a harder conversation because someone isn't where they need to be, it's much easier if we're not having that hard conversation all at once. And there's been these little moments of feedback and debriefing together leading up to that point.
I think the ability to constantly innovate and adapt based on critical debrief is probably the greatest strength of the SEAL teams. And it's not apparent from TV shows, it's not apparent from movies and maybe even books that people read, but every combat operation, we would come back and we would drop our gear and we would sit in our mission planning space and we would spend a few minutes debriefing. Exactly what you just said, what went right, what went wrong, what can we do to fix that going forward? How can we adjust our tactics now to what the enemy's doing? Is there some new technology or new methodologies that are out there that we could utilize to maybe make us more effective in what we're trying to do? And then we take the lessons learned from that, in that debrief, roll it right into the planning execution for the very next combat mission. And this is the same thing for anything out there. You can debrief anything that you're doing, whether it's a project at work, whether it's going to the grocery store with your kids, any of that. You debrief it, you come up with some standard operating procedures, you enhance those standard operating procedures, you're always looking to make them better and improve them in every capacity. And I think what that does is it enables you to make small micro corrections on a daily or multiple times a day basis, so that instead of giant corrections, you know, once you get way off course and now you actually have to have a tough conversation with somebody's performance that's really suffering, or somebody who's just on a tangential, maybe you're going to a different strategic goal that I'm going to and we're just misaligned in some way. That doesn't happen if we're constantly debriefing and we're constantly making those micro adjustments.
Yeah, I think where people miss is that they're not intentional about it. So we have debriefs when large problems happen or big projects are put into place, but we're not taking the opportunity regularly to have the small debriefs. And that's where I tell people that the power is building a culture where you just debrief everything. At Echelon Front, if I go on site with an instructor and we do a half day workshop, the second we're getting in that Uber, we're like, hey, any feedback points for me? And it tears down the feeling sometimes of doing a debrief of like, man, I might get in trouble here. What those negative feelings around a debrief where we're going to be talking about the things that didn't go well. And it makes it more this effort to help each other. Hey, what'd you see that I didn't? What are we missing? And we're taking that moment to debrief. And then for bigger events, if we run a conference or muster events, we're doing a very thorough debrief. But to your point, when we go through those debrief points or we read through the feedback from attendees and they're giving us opportunities to improve, we're immediately taking those feedback elements and we're putting them into practice. We're updating an SOP. We're implementing a new plan. That innovate and adapt is so critical on the back end of debriefing. But without the first debrief and creating those little opportunities to debrief regularly, we get off course, people get misaligned, problems don't get solved. We forget about those things and we make the same mistakes over and over again, which is why that culture of debrief is so critical to help us avoid the hard conversations with our people.
Those debriefs are only effective if they are critical, right? You have to have an honest self-assessment. It has to be honest. Sometimes it has to be brutally honest. And sometimes what the debrief can turn into is, hey, let me tell everybody all the great things that I'm doing. And that's not what a debrief is. It's a chance to actually look at yourself and say, okay, here's what I need to do to improve. Here's also what the debrief isn't, is Jamie, you suck and you need to fix yourself and you screwed this up. Because now I'm just attacking you. This is the opposite of extreme ownership. I'm pointing fingers at you. What do you get? What's that going to do? You're going to get defensive. You're going to start to push back. What do you mean I suck? You suck. You're the one that screwed that up. You didn't give me the support I needed, or you didn't make that clear. So if I'm simply being critical of you or everybody else, then there's defensiveness. No one's actually taking ownership. I can't control you. I can't control other people. So what I have to do is set the tone by taking ownership. Here's the things that I need to do better going forward. Here's the things that I learned from that. And I think it makes all the difference in the world if you start with an honest self-assessment. But it has to be honest. And if you set the tone for critical debrief to talk about things that you screwed up, that makes it okay for everybody else as well.
You have to build this though with your team. So what's funny is we did a partnered effort with another organization, and we had this partnered effort, and at the end of the effort, we all got on. It was with our marketing team, and we hopped on this call to debrief it. And the debrief was, you know, talking about all the things that went well. And to your point, there was a lot of, hey, this went well, this went well, but the metrics weren't quite where they needed to be. And there were some things that we need to adjust for the next time we run this project. And so our Echelon Front team was going through a debrief the way that we've built our culture, which is to be brutally honest and have that critical self-assessment. So we were kind of coming in hot with these feedback points with the intent of this is how we get better. And I realized halfway through the call that I had to recognize that this wasn't the culture of this other organization. And that what it might've sounded is that we were just being super negative and like we failed and we did this. And they hadn't conditioned themselves yet to recognizing that that's the point of the debrief, is to recognize where we failed and what we're going to do better next time. The first part, which is, hey, what did we do well, is like the quick and easy. Okay, cool. Those things are great. Now let's get into the nitty gritty. And I had to pull back a little bit and help them realize that that's part of our culture. And we had to adjust a little bit in the way we offered that feedback because it wasn't natural in that setting. So with our teams, with our family, I debrief with my kids all the time. You have to build up their capabilities within the debrief, because if you come right out the gate. And that's why it's so important we do it regularly and often, is it can feel really negative initially, even when people are taking ownership. When the whole focus is what can we do to get better and where did we fail? Sometimes people...
We work with companies and organizations all the time, and we are constantly learning lessons. Sometimes we're learning a new angle on a lesson we've previously known. Sometimes we realize we need to give a piece of information that we haven't emphasized enough. And that's why we created The Rundown.
The Rundown is an email that we send out every other week. And this isn't your typical newsletter trying to sell you a bunch of stuff. This is simply just a practical breakdown of a leadership principle, how to apply it in a real world situation, and then some action steps that you can take to make sure that you can use this principle to solve your problems through leadership. Go sign up for The Rundown at echelonfront.com.
Put up a little bit of a wall there. So we have to build this into our culture and get people, build that muscle memory a little bit for what the purpose of a debrief is. But doing it absolutely helps us avoid the really tough conversations when problems continue to persist.
Yeah, but back to that tough conversations idea, right? I think that quote that we wrote in Dichotomy of Leadership, most underperformers don't need to be fired, they need to be led. It's a recognition that nobody's perfect. There isn't any perfect human being out there, including yourself. You might be frustrated with other people. You have your own strengths and weaknesses. I certainly do. And so nobody's perfect. We're all going to mess things up. And so when you look at that from a constructive way, that makes those debriefs a little bit easier to tolerate. When, look, the purpose of this is to improve. The purpose of this is to get better. And I think you can do that in a way that's too harsh, certainly. But if you do it in a constructive way, people realize that you care about them, you want them to improve. I think then you realize that you're actually not helping someone. You know, if I see you doing something, I'm like, that doesn't really make sense. Or, hey, what does that look like to the team? Maybe Jamie doesn't see that. Or then if I don't actually address that or maybe ask some questions of you around that, I'm actually not helping you. Now, the best way to do that is to take the indirect approach, to not come at you heavy, to be like, Jamie, you shouldn't have said that. That wasn't good. But now that's a very direct approach. You're going to get defensive. And so now we're actually going to have kind of a clash of me versus you. Like, what are you talking about? Versus if I can say, hey, Jamie, when you said that, what do you think that sounds like to the rest of the team? And now the indirect approach is allowing you to open your mind. Instead of closing your mind and getting defensive, it's allowing you to open your mind and to consider the actual answer to the question, so that if you can actually reveal the truth to to yourself instead of me revealing the truth to you, now you can say, oh, I see, you know, I'm going to be careful about that next time. I'm going to make sure that I phrase that in a way that sounds better to people, because that's definitely not what I meant. And I don't want the team to have a misperception there. So I think when we do that and we think about these kind of debriefs in very, very small forms like that, even just asking an earnest question, I think that's a great way to get people to reveal the truth to themselves so that they can start to make some adjustments to get better, to improve. And I think if you do that, and recognize that nobody's perfect, you're going to help people get better, and that's going to enable you to avoid hard conversations, because those people are going to continue to improve, they're going to continue to be better, and they're going to be great performers.
So to avoid the hard conversation, we're going to prioritize the relationship, we're going to implement the debrief, we're going to give more regular feedback and have those conversations, we're going to take ownership in those moments, we're going to ask earnest questions, take the indirect approach. There's a bunch of tactical things we can do to help and avoid in those hard conversations.
And this idea that nobody's perfect and you're not perfect, I think oftentimes, whether it's for your kids playing sports or in school with academics, or whether it's if you're a boss or you're in a leadership position and you have a team and you got people that you care about, there's a real trap that you could fall into of holding them to a higher standard than you could have possibly achieved, or that you can achieve. And that's a real issue. And I think people do it from a place because they care. You care about your kids. You love your kids. You don't want them to make the same mistakes that you made. You care about people on your team. You want them to be better. But the trap there is that you have to have a realistic expectation that no one's perfect. You can't expect perfection. It's going to be a problem if you do. And one example that we would see in SEAL training, when Jocko and I came back from, you know, the Battle of Ramadi, and I got a chance to take over running a leadership training course for the SEAL teams. And this was, I would see this pretty regularly, where you would have a SEAL instructor who had gone, maybe they'd gone through training, you know, 4, 5, 6 years before this. And they might say, someone is failing the run, right? So you have these performance metrics that you have to meet. You have to pass your 4 mile timed runs. You have to pass, you know, your 2 mile swims. You have to pass your obstacle courses, all these metrics that you have to meet. And so if you're failing that, that's a problem. You can get performance drop for that. So we'd see SEAL instructors who would say, you know, this student, they failed their run here in third phase. We need to get rid of them and drop them. Well, the good senior leaders, like a good master chief, realizes that it might be a standard that we're holding this a little bit too high. And so with BUDS, our basic SEAL training program, the records exist all the way back, you know, for decades. And so that master chief could pull up the records and say, oh, Babin, oh, you were in BUDS class 241. Cool. Looks like you failed a run here in third phase. Like, do you still want to drop this student for that? And it was a very humbling experience for a lot of those instructors when they realized, hey, I'm holding these students to a standard that I could never achieve. And so I think you have to be really careful about that, because you, even if you're doing it from a place of goodwill, you care about you care about your kids, you care about your team. If you're holding them to an unrealistic standard, they're never going to be able to achieve that. Then you're actually not helping them. So you have to be realistic. Nobody's perfect. So you're going to have to recognize that people are going to fall short of the mark. And sometimes a humbling failure, as Jocko says, letting your kids brush up against the guardrails of failure is often the best teacher.
Nowhere do I see that play out more than with my own children, where I have to constantly remind myself and my husband that we are far more generous with our younger selves. I'm far more generous with what I either did or didn't do or the mistakes that I made than I am with my own kids. And I have to remember all the time that, nope, I also wasn't perfect. And I also made these mistakes. And these are to be expected. So recognizing and understanding the standard that your people should be at, whether it's your kids or your team, and giving them a little grace when they screw up. Because like you said, we're not perfect and nobody is. And when we put them in this category, put them with this high standard that they can't meet, we're failing them because they're never going to be able to get to where we think they should be, which inevitably leads to the difficult conversations. So I think at this point, you know, you've got someone on your team and you've done everything you can to try and avoid this hard conversation. You've prioritized the relationship. You're asking earnest questions. You've implemented the debrief and given them feedback. You've tried to resolve small issues as they've come up in a timely manner. And despite all of your best efforts, you still have someone that is underperforming. And now you have to have that difficult conversation. What happens next?
Well, what you have to do is recognize that that at some point you have to have loyalty to the overall team and the mission over any one individual. And I think when you have an individual on the team that is dragging the rest of the team down, if all focus is on that individual and trying to consistently help them, I think once you've done everything that you can to help them get better and help them improve, then you're going to have to make the difficult decision to either move them to a different part of the organization where they can contribute maybe in a positive manner, or maybe even that you might actually just have to get rid of them and replace them with someone else that can do the job. And you're not helping that person if you leave them in a role where they simply can't perform. But that starts with recognizing that most underperformers don't need to be fired. They need to be led. And it starts with taking ownership. And then you have to lead through what we call the escalation of counseling. So it starts with, you know, if you're underperforming, Jamie, I have to say, hey, Jamie, this is my fault. You know, as your boss, I didn't explain what the expectations were. I didn't check in with you to make sure that we were on time, you know, and that project was going to get done. I didn't talk to you about the importance of that project and what's at stake if we don't actually achieve that. But once we've had that conversation, hopefully that fixes it and we're good to go. But once, you know, if we come back and you're still failing to perform after I've done all those things, now we have to escalate. I might have to put it down on paper. Jamie, I'm going to have to write this down on paper. You know, your performance is, we're still not able to get this project done. I've checked in with you. You know how important it was. You know, you said you were going to have it done and it wasn't done. Now I'm actually going to have to put this down on paper. So I might have to escalate that to written counseling. Finally, we might actually have to get to a place where I just have to say, Jamie, your performance is here. And you got to get here. And if you don't get there, you know, by the end of the quarter, we're going to actually have to let you go. I don't want to have to do that. Hopefully that fixes the problem, right? And we can move forward. But at the end of the day, it may not be a fixable problem. Not every problem is fixable. And I think chapter 2 of Extreme Ownership is called No Bad Teams, Only Bad Leaders. Because you as a leader are responsible for everything that your team does. You're responsible for that. You know, and but what that doesn't mean is that everyone is fixable, because it's not the case. And so I think once you've done everything you can to try to help someone succeed or improve, you might actually have to have that tough conversation, and that might move to their termination from employment, and you might actually have to replace them. And while it's never pleasant to have to fire someone, that's always a difficult thing. What's interesting is that oftentimes, if you have gone through this process and you've done everything you can to build a better relationship, to take ownership, to debrief, to provide points of feedback, to escalate counseling, once you get to a point where you have to do that, there's often a sense of relief in that person, because they knew that they couldn't perform. They knew they were just letting the team down. They knew that they actually weren't getting the job done, and no one wants to be in that position. So it was not only good for the team, but it's actually good for them not to be in that job long-term and to go find a job where they can actually perform and they can actually contribute in a positive way.
But I think it's important for people to recognize that leading up to that difficult conversation, if that conversation is, hey, you don't get to work here anymore, if that's the direction we're heading, or a really tough conversation with your kid, is up until that point, all of those little moments of escalation that you're describing ownership has to exist. And I think that's where people start to get off kilter a little bit, because we get through those. We have that first conversation, we take ownership. We have the next conversation, we take ownership. And it's some way along that escalation of counseling, we put ownership to the side and we now say, this is your fault, you need to fix yourself. And we start making it about the other person. There is a way and a process to take ownership from the very onset of those small conversations, that escalation of counseling, all the way up to the moment where you may have to let someone go. Ownership exists at every single spot. So we can't put ownership in the closet when we're going through these conversations. It has to exist all the way up, even to that point where you may be saying, hey, I now have to take ownership for the rest of the people on my team. I have to now take ownership for the mission and the culture we're creating by having an underperformer or having someone that's creating a negative environment here. That ownership still exists. And when you're taking ownership in that process, it's very critical that as a leader, you're recognizing that if you have to let someone go, you are at fault for that. You are unable to put them in a position to have them be successful. You are unable to find somewhere in the organization where they could add value. You didn't give feedback in the timely manner that you needed to. You didn't have those harder conversations earlier on. You didn't build the relationship that you needed. Whatever it might be, ownership still has to exist. You can't just let it go.
That's 100% correct. And at the end of the day, if you've done everything you can to try to help that person and they haven't improved, you have to take ownership of letting them go, because what you have to take ownership of is the team's performance. Are you accomplishing your mission? Are you not accomplishing your mission? If somebody is negatively impacting that, you got to take ownership of the team's overall performance and the success of the mission. So there is never a time where ownership doesn't exist, but the greater loyalty has to be to the overall team and the strategic mission.
100%. So we've got our immediate action drill for this episode is to implement the debrief. Just start by creating an opportunity for your team to debrief when things go wrong, having those small opportunities to make corrections and give feedback so you can build a culture where hopefully you don't have to have those really tough conversations. You can start with the small issues when they arise and implement that debrief to solve them before we get to that point.
And this can happen. It doesn't have to be the end of a major project. Of course, you should debrief those things, but this could be just the meeting. You come out of a meeting. How'd the meeting go? What went right? What went wrong? What can you do to fix it going forward? You know, I had an interaction with my boss. Did it go well? Did it not go well? What can we do to improve that? You can debrief anything that you have to do. And so think about how you can implement that debrief in the things large and small, interaction with your kids, interaction with your spouse, at work. That debrief will make all the difference in the world, so you can make those constant micro adjustments to improve, and that will enable you to lead and win. So until next time, lead yourself, lead your team, and win.